From WNYC in New York, this is NPR's On the Media. Bob Garfield is away. I'm Brooke Gladstone. This week, the firestorm ignited by the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth in ads and interviews blazes on, spreading from cable news to the nation's most respected newspapers, fueled by a steady stream of what we in the media like to call developments. At first, the Swift Boat Veterans had the stage to themselves. On television, they made their claims opposite critics and surrogates enlisted by the Kerry campaign, while the anchors sat back in a stunning display of irresponsibility disguised as impartiality. Finally, after doubts had been firmly lodged in the minds of some voters, the major newspapers and the Kerry campaign weighed in. The candidates spoke, and counter-ads were crafted. But those ads took an interesting turn, attacking the tactics rather than the charges. The chief weapon employed in those ads? Arizona Republican and former Vietnam prisoner of war, Senator John McCain.
I'm John Kerry, and I approve this message.
American soldiers are fighting in Iraq. Families struggle to afford health care, jobs heading overseas. Instead of solutions, George Bush's campaign supports a front group attacking John Kerry's military record. Attacks called smears, lies. Senator McCain calls them dishonest. Bush smeared John McCain 4 years ago. Now he's doing it to John Kerry. George Bush denounced the smear. Get back to the issues. America deserves better.
Along with the ad referencing McCain, on the Kerry website, you can also find this clip from a Larry King show during the last campaign. The Kerry people added the ominous chord, but the words are McCain's, and they sting.
Let me tell you what really went over the line. Governor Bush had an event, and he paid for it, and stood next to a spokesman for a fringe veterans group. That fringe veteran said that John McCain had abandoned the veterans. Now, I don't know how if you can understand this, George, but that really hurts.
Yeah.
That really hurts. And so, 5 United States senators, Vietnam veterans, heroes, some of them really incredible heroes, wrote George a letter and said, apologize.
Yeah.
You should be ashamed.
McCain condemns the Swift Boat ads, even as he stumps for President Bush. But it's impossible to tell how he feels about his role as political football, seen in one place castigating candidate Bush on TV in 2000 and in another hugging him on the campaign trail today. In Thursday's New York Times, McCain said that he would, once again, express his displeasure over the ads, this time personally to Bush. But he also asked the Kerry campaign to stop airing the spots that reference his 2000 primary scraps with Bush. The campaign promptly complied. In fact, it may be the promptest action the Kerry campaign has taken so far. We called Chad Clanton, a senior campaign advisor in the Kerry War Room, to ask about the timing.
Well, I think the real turning point was when the Washington Post had a front page story the same day that Kerry went out, and it proved one of the central critics in this effort, Mr. Thurlow, that the charges he had been making were completely false. And once it hit the mainstream press like that, we immediately pounced on it.
How did the Washington Post get hold of that story? Did that come from researchers in the war room?
It came from people. Eyewitnesses have been coming forward around the country who were there that have spoken up about John Kerry's courage under fire.
And they certainly would have brought that information to the attention of the Kerry campaign, and I assume from that point the war room would have distributed it to the mainstream media, like the Washington Post.
Absolutely. We've gotten lots of people contacting us that just said, look, put me in the press, put me on the radio, I gotta speak out about this.
Symbiosis between campaigns and the media is an old story. What's new, or at least newish in this case, is the prolonged passivity of news outlets, their seeming reluctance to put the charges of the Swift Boat vets, no matter how outrageous, in context. The impact of cable TV cannot be minimized, and there the ratio of light to heat diminishes daily.
Begin this hour with a display of political showmanship, gamesmanship, brinksmanship. That's sure to keep the Swift Boat flap afloat for a few more days.
Right, a lot of theater here, he said, she said, and so forth. But it underlying that, Miles, there's some very strong feelings on both sides. You've got some angry Vietnam veterans who are angry at
what his fellow Vietnam
guys are saying what they experienced with him. They contradict just about every story he has told about his experience.
I mean, you've seen the records, haven't you? What's your opinion?
I'm sorry, my opinion? No, I don't have opinions. I'm a reporter, John. My job is to spend half the time repeating what one side says and half the time repeating the other. Little thing called objectivity. Might want to look up someday.
Okay, that last clip was from Comedy Central's Daily Show. But even the nation's best newspapers held back for some time before informing the debate with actual facts, even when those facts were readily available. Writing in the online edition of The American Prospect, a liberal political journal, executive editor Michael Tomasky marveled at the delayed response of the press. Quote, "You'd think that a press corps that has now officially acknowledged that it was had by this administration on the pre-Iraq war propaganda would think twice about letting itself get used one more time."
The New York Times did a very thorough story on Friday, August 20th, looking into the origins of the group, its possible connections to the Bush campaign. But my point is this, that it was August 20th before the Times did that story, and the story broke on August 4th. So that's 16 days of lag time. And in those crucial 16 days, the allegations by John O'Neill and his comrades were reported, 80,000 times in the American media. And what their motivations and connections might be was reported a fraction of that.
The Swift Boat story has been a staple of the cable news shows all month long. Why is it getting so much traction?
It's getting traction because it's sensational. And I would argue that it's sensational because one side is plainly lying and one side is plainly telling the truth. And my complaint about the coverage of the story so far would be that the conventions of journalism do not permit it to make a distinction between lies and the truth. Objective journalism has to cover stories as this side said and that side said. I mean, let's say, for example, Brooke, that you and I were much more important people than we actually are, and the kind of people whose utterances the media covered. And let's say that in my next breath on this show, I said something scurrilous about you that I knew to be untrue, but that I said that it was based on some incident from 20 years ago, and I happened to know because I was there. Now, you would know that it's not true. I would know deep down that it's not true, but the press would have to cover it, as Tomasky says, Gladstone says. And if I had the money to run television commercials saying it, and if I had the connections, say, for example, to Matt Drudge to feed him a new tidbit every 3 or 4 days to keep the story bouncing along, then the media would have to continue it to cover it, as Tomasky says, Gladstone says. And before you know it, half the country would believe this thing that I said about you.
But there's a flaw in your argument, because you say that the conventions of quote-unquote objective journalism demand a he-said-she-said format, but it doesn't really. I mean, you can report the unsupported statements of the person making the scurrilous charges and still offer a kind of analysis and assessment to refute them.
I would say that there has been journalism on this Swift Boat issue that has fallen into that category. But I also do think there is a big fear of being called liberal and being accused of bias by conservatives. And I think that there's also just a lack of imagination about how to go about balancing this story and stories like it and giving the fuller context. The piece that I took issue with was a piece on the front page of last Sunday's Washington Post, which was a very long examination of the charges back and forth between Kerry and the Swift Boat people. And I'm sure the editors of the Washington Post would say, well, we were doing a very thorough search for the truth there. But if I'm an assignment editor at the Washington Post, aware that we've just run a 3,000 or so word story and bannered it on page one on Sunday, I think to myself, now what can we do to balance this, to fill out the context? I think it's entirely fair that the Washington Post, under those circumstances, might consider doing a 3,000-word story on the history of Dick Cheney's 5 deferments during the Vietnam era. Now, I doubt they'll do that because there is no Vietnam Veterans for the Truth About Deferments out there pushing their story. And that, too, says something sad about journalism and initiative and enterprise and giving readers the fuller context.
This week, editorial boards and ombudsmen of newspapers around the country, the LA Times, the Sun in Baltimore, the Star Tribune in Minneapolis, they've all been doing some serious public hand-wringing over whether their papers should be covering this story at all, even as their news pages are filled with the stuff. Is this public display of agony an attempt to inoculate the papers from criticism?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, there are these bouts of self-examination every time something like this happens, and people say we'll do it differently next time, and then next time comes and they do it exactly the same way. I don't see much hope for progress.
Do you think that ultimately it was the cable news coverage that drove it into the pages of high-quality publications like the New York Times and the Washington Post?
Certainly, cable drove this story. And let's be candid here. A lot of this is driven by Fox, and Fox obviously has an ideology. And Fox wants to support what these Swift Boat people are saying and get it out there. And MSNBC and CNN both want to keep up with Fox because Fox has higher ratings. So they want to try and, to some extent, do what Fox does.
You know, the Washington Post executive editor Len Downey said recently that newspapers drive their own agenda, that cable TV has nothing to do with it.
I think I understand what Len Downey is trying to say, that they try not to let the Washington Post be driven by cable news and gabfests and shouting matches. But I don't think it's realistic. I mean, first of all, the politicians themselves react to cable. Their staffs watch it. They come out the next day in response to what happened on cable last night. So that obviously affects what the New York Times and the Washington Post do in terms of how they cover them. So cable has come to have incredibly vast influence among the political class. And, you know, Len Downey, as much as he would like to be, can't be insulated from it.
Michael Tomasky, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Michael Tomasky is the executive editor of the American Prospect magazine. Now an update. As of Tuesday, Time magazine White House correspondent Matt Cooper no longer faces 18 months in prison. Cooper was charged with contempt of court for refusing to name the source who leaked him the name of CIA operative Valerie Plame. But this week, Cooper gave a name to Justice Department prosecutors, that of Louis I. Scooter Libby, Vice President Cheney's chief of staff. The prosecutors had asked specifically about Libby, who then waived his confidentiality agreement with the reporter. But Cooper had referred to sources in his piece, so there may be more than one. The story isn't over yet. Coming up, why the margin of error is bigger than you think, and a poke in the eye of public radio. This is On the Media from NPR. This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. Judging from the now unceasing deluge of tracking polls, which candidate leads by 3 points is the most important question facing America. Nearly every day, a new poll by Gallup or Zogby, CNN or Time, suggests who would win if the election were today. And the pundits and politicos scramble to interpret the polls, for those of us who don't know a margin of error, from a confidence interval. Often, though, the interpreters themselves are misled by the findings. So with the blind leading the blind, we find ourselves adrift in a fog of figures. The Columbia Journalism Review's CampaignDesk.org explored the poll problem in a recent article, and we're joined now by the author, Thomas Lang. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So you give the example of a Newsweek poll that was reported on CNN back in July. The poll found that 51% of voters supported Kerry Edwards and 45% supported Bush Cheney. That's a 6-point gap. The margin of error was plus or minus 4%, and so the CNN analyst reported that the margin of error had been exceeded. What's wrong with this picture?
Well, the poll wasn't outside the margin of error. You could take Kerry's number, 51, and either add 4 points to it or subtract 4 points to it, and it would still be within the margin of error. Now, if we took both numbers, for instance, and we took Kerry and subtracted 4 points, we'd have 47. And if we took Bush and added 4 points, we'd have 49. Bush 49, Kerry 47. Uh-oh, who's in the lead? We don't really know. Now, statistically, the probability of that actually being the result is pretty low, but it still is definitely within the margin of error.
So what you're saying is even though Kerry was polling at 51% and Bush at 45%, that the candidates could have been tied?
It's possible.
Does that mean that there really isn't any value in reporting poll numbers that fall inside the margin of error?
Well, there's a value. The most important thing to look for in polling is not necessarily the head-to-head number, but the internal numbers. For instance, after the Democratic National Convention, polling numbers didn't show a bounce that some people expected from Kerry. But if he went and looked inside the numbers, people were more confident that he could handle Iraq or more confident that he could handle the economy. A consultant who wrote a op-ed for the Boston Globe once compared the head-to-head numbers, taking the national number, like waking up in the morning, turning on the TV, and there being a national temperature, and then getting dressed according to that national temperature. The national vote isn't what decides the election. So I encourage people to go out and look for, Zogby has a battleground poll, and also just the state-to-state polls. What's going on in Florida? What's going on in Michigan? Can really possibly tell you more about the race than the head-to-head poll.
Now, beside the margin of error, there's another technical aspect of polls that's rarely mentioned in news reports, but you mention it in your piece, and that's called the confidence interval.
The confidence interval indicates that if several samplings of the same randomly selected pool of voters were taken, then the true number for all voters would lie within the range set by the margin of error for 95% of the samples. It's usually 95% in the United States.
You mean if you did the poll 100 times, it would come up right 95% of the time?
Well, come up right. That's a good way to put it. So let's look at an analogy here. Take a roulette wheel. This is not your average roulette wheel. It has 95 green spots on it and 5 red spots. The problem with polling is you can't see whether or not it lands in red or green. You don't know if the poll that you just came up with is an outlier.
In other words, any given poll that is reported by the media is probably mostly right, but could be completely wrong.
Right. That's a good way of saying it.
You offer a kind of solution in your piece, and naturally, not to sound like Michael Moore, it seems to lie in Canada. So tell us how it's done by our brethren in the North.
Canada has laws, the Canadian Election Act, which require its media to report the methodology, the question order, the sponsors of the polls, the margin of error, and the confidence interval. The writers there learned about polling, and therefore, when two polls come out that are entirely different, can explain that to the readers. Let me read you something that was in one of Vaughn Palmer's articles, political writer for the Vancouver Sun. Pollsters, mindful of the principles of random sampling, always record that their results will fall within the margin of error 19 times out of 20. Perhaps this was the 20th time when the true picture was somewhere outside the box.
Okay, well, that's Canada, but would Americans, do you think, accept such elaborate technical explanations?
Well, the culture in the United States is to get the information out as quickly as possible, even if it is careless.
So basically what you're describing is a caveat emptor situation for the news consumer. They can see the poll, but if they don't have the complete story, then they simply don't know whether to trust it.
That's exactly what it is.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Thomas Lang reports for Columbia Journalism Review's CampaignDesk.org. This program, you've probably noticed, puts all manner of media under the microscope, from the Fox News Channel to the New York Times. This year, we've even considered some controversial comings and goings at our own institution, public radio. But only once have we devoted a whole half hour to considering the foibles, real and imagined, of our unique media enterprise, and that was back in January 2003. People liked it, so in these dog days of August, we thought we'd play it again. What follows, then, is a send-up of the most outrageous stereotypes ever applied to public radio, an unforgivably self-indulgent exercise in biting the hand that feeds us. We call our little production Pledge This, a peek inside a struggling public radio station in the mythical planned community of Blandon Park, featuring the vocal stylings of Janine Garofalo, Fred Willard, and Tony Shalhoub. And by the way, NPR had nothing to do with this. Garfield and I wrote it. So send your reactions to onthemedia@wnyc.org.
Fine time to leave.
Dr. Tom Richards, Blandon Park's leading cosmetic surgeon, celebrates the grand opening of his Lipo Depot.
Celebrates the grand opening of his Lipo Depot. WFAST. Give us 2 minutes and 45 seconds and we'll give you the
WACLU 87.1, all the way to the left on your radio dial. Listeners supported news and Dulcimer broadcasting direct 18 hours a day, 24 during pledge drives from the Blandon Park Mall. Coming up, Blandon Park Edition with Trent Rosenblit.
Trent Rosenblit, your Ethiopian takeout is waiting at the desk. Mary Demarest, line one. Mary, line one.
I didn't eat all my baba ganoush if anybody wants it. Hello, newsroom. This is Mary Demarest. Oh, hello, Your Excellency. No, I really don't. I'm... Now? Can it wait? Well, I know the station has a cash flow problem, but there's a pledge drive in a couple of weeks. I'm sure that will bring in... Gosh, hundreds of dollars. Shut down the station. Things can't be that bad. All right, but please, make it fast, and don't let it be another sleazebag. How would I define sleazebag? Mr. Pringle, wasn't your last hot underwriting prospect the Psychic Hotline Federation? You're the president. Bye. Unbelievable. Trent, guess what?
That was Pringle. The station's broke, and he's bringing in another unsavory underwriter. Have you tried the Ethiopian kick, Alicia? Pureed yellow lentils and exotic spices. Marvelous.
Do you have to listen to all my conversations?
Mary, how far do we sit apart?
3 feet.
What do you do all day?
Talk on the phone.
What do you do after every call?
Tell you about it.
Even when I'm...
Busy.
The day you set up that David Bowie interview, what did you do when you hung up the phone?
Told you about it.
Even though I was...
Passing a kidney stone. Come on, Trent, it was David Bowie, for crying out
loud.
No,
I don't disagree. The point is, Mary, I'm not eavesdropping. I'm just skipping the middleman.
All right. Do you think we're really in trouble?
Oh, jeez. Que sera, sera. Listen, I want to talk to you about this Jenkins interview today. I've been looking over the questions, and they seem to lack a certain gravitas.
What?
Well, I don't want to be harsh, but the material is a bit lightweight. I was wondering if you might take another look.
Oh, come on, Trent. It's 3 o'clock. Our cutaway is in 83 minutes. I have an entire newscast to write. I have to edit Porfiria's commentary. I have to scratch the ears of Pringle's latest capitalist running dog. And if you don't like the questions, write some of your own.
You know I don't write questions. That's the producer's job.
All right. What questions don't you like?
Well... For example, Courtney Jenkins, you are the Girl Scout cookie sales champ for Blandon Park. You sold 1,212 boxes of cookies. What are your selling secrets?
What on earth is the matter with that?
Don't you find it a bit juvenile?
She's 11.
That's no reason to be condescending.
Those jackasses, those simple-minded jackasses!
Ah, our understated commentator. New horn on the wheelchair, Porfiria?
Hello, Porfiria. You look so lovely today.
I can't believe this.
Can't believe what?
I don't mean lovely in a patronizing way.
Gotten Himmel. This frosts my patoot.
Because I would never resort to demeaning gender stereotypes, which are, of course, tantamount to sexual violence.
Trent, please. Porfiria, what is it this time?
Yesterday's commentary about Prince Charles's visit to Metroplex.
Yeah, you called the future king of England a poster child for inbreeding. I thought we might get a little feedback.
Sure, if you want to take a few words out of context.
I have the reel right here. Let's give it a listen, shall we?
Don't these pasty-faced kidney-philiacs know they lost the Revolutionary War? If the prince, formerly known as Doofus, wants to tie up traffic with his motorcade, he can take his pallid, red-lipped, old-schooled, kipper-stinking, darts-tossing, pub-crawling, banger-stuffed rump in a lorry and drive the wrong side of the road straight off the white cliffs of Dover. On the other hand, is there anything nicer for breakfast than a hot, toasted English muffin? For WACLU, this is Porfiria Stolfoot's Hawk Feather. See? It's balanced.
I'll just send out the form apology. So what do you have today?
Wheelchair access. Yesterday, I was denied admittance to a public venue.
In this day and age, that's unbelievable. Which public venue?
Skate-O-Rama.
The ice rink?
Just because I'm not able-bodied.
That's ridiculous. You are able-bodied.
Mary.
I just can't get Friday night out of my mind.
Ah, the limbo contest.
What are you saying? Mary, what are you saying?
Nothing.
You know I'm a semiplegic.
don't make me bring lawyers into this.
Just read me the commentary.
I hope you're not suggesting.
I'm not suggesting anything. I fully understand that many people are disabled with...
Differently abled, Mary.
Okay. Differently abled
with... The term is counterintuitively gifted, thank you very much.
All right. Counterintuitively gifted with restless leg syndrome.
Afflicting 10 million Americans with tragic annoyance. Plus, in my case, a morbid disinclination to walk. I have a doctor's note.
Mary, the Girl Scout will be
Scooter
here...
Scooter Pyle, line one. Scooter Pyle, line one.
Hello. Hello.
Gott in Himmel. I can't tolerate this commotion. It unsettles my extremities.
Hold on, hold on, hold on. Gotta deal with Studio One. Scooter, what?
Yo, Mary, what's up?
Nothing's up. I'm talking to Porphyria. Why?
Then why are you calling me?
I'm not. There's a phone call for you. This is the intercom.
I'm out of here. I have a commentary to write.
Scooter Pyle, line one. Scooter, pick up line one.
Who do you suppose it is?
How should I know? You're the engineer. Why don't you try something technical, like picking up the phone?
Good idea. Maybe about my silencer. See you, Mary.
Silencer? What's that, some new piece of equipment in his control room?
I don't think so.
Hello, team.
Oh, no.
Now, Horatio, this is the newsroom itself. This is the nerve center. This is where it all comes together.
Hello, Mr. Pringle.
Hello, team. Allow me the pleasure of introducing our newest broadcast partner, Horatio Chung.
Oh, please don't stand up.
Broadcast partner, Mr. Pringle?
That's right. Mr. Chung is the newest member of our team. He's very excited about partnering with us and exploring the synergies that will direct WACLU toward a new paradigm for the 21st century. From the moment he read our mission statement, he knew he wished to...
Advertise on our station.
Exactly.
Absolutely not. No, ma'am. Not while I'm president of WACLU will we have any advertising on it. No, 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 no. This is a sacred trust we have been entrusted with. We are not salesmen. We are stewards of the public airwaves. And we are not for sale. Repeat, not for sale.
Well said, Mr. Pringle. Shall we play her the commercial?
I'll bet you mean underwriting credit.
Of course he does. Mr. Chung, Mary is the producer of Blandon Park Edition, and as you can see, she is as fiercely independent as she is bright and unthreateningly attractive.
I can see that you are fearful, Miss Demarest, but there is no need for you to be concerned. The people I represent share your agenda.
Public radio has no agenda.
The people I represent share your lack of an agenda.
Mary and Trent, Mr. Chung is the Director of Public Outreach, North American Directorate for the People's Republic of China.
Pringle.
What? Oh, did I say China? I meant the Middle Kingdom. Mr. Chung represents the Middle Kingdom.
We are repositioning the brand.
New and improved and on our team.
Mary...
I'm in a situation here. I can't rewrite the questions now.
But I've got to make an important phone call, and then the kid'll be here, and I've got nothing but softballs to lob.
You don't hear Larry King complaining.
Okay, listen, I'm running out to the mall for a moment.
I thought you had to make a phone call.
I do, but the Kikalisha has me parsed. I'm going to stop by World of Cuisine for a cup of hot Afghan yogurt. I won't be long.
Mary, if you don't mind, Mr. Chung's support is worth a great deal to WACLU, so I need a moment of your undivided attention, and I need you to keep an open mind.
Uh-huh. That's what you said when you brought in the Dioxin Foundation.
Deep pockets, too. We could have skipped the fall pledge drive, so please, Mary, if you'll just give an ear to the funding credit, I'm sure you'll also want to enlist Chai, the Middle Kingdom, onto the role of esteemed teammates as much as I do.
WACLU is supported by listeners like you. Also by the Middle Kingdom, sponsors of the 35th National Congress of the Communist Party, where President Jiang Zemin wowed the crowd with his 30,000-word report titled, Hold High the Great Banner of Socialism Despite Imperialist Meddling in Our Internal Affairs. The Middle Kingdom, where labor is cheap and expression is dear.
I, for one, think it strikes just the right tone.
Excuse me, Mr. Chung. May I have a quick word with His Eminence?
By all means.
Sign him up, Mr. Pringle. I'm sure you'll be able to find another producer in no time.
Are you saying you'd resign?
I'm saying I'd resign and Trent would follow me out the door. But I'm sure Porphyria would make an excellent anchor.
Luz Rosenblit? He's the dean of Suburban Metroplex Broadcast Journalists, not counting Metroplex Heights. This place could go down like the... What was that horrible disaster movie?
Pluto Nash?
All right, Mary, you may win this one. But when it's time to get your Christmas tote bag, don't come crying to me.
WACLU, hold please. WACLU, hold please.
Back at a flash, Trudy. I'm running out to the mall.
Godspeed, Mr. Rosenblatt.
Attention Blandon Park Mall shoppers, looking for the perfect gift for that certain Blandon Park someone? For mailboxes, lawn ornaments, and bicycle reflectors in tasteful earth tones, check out the deals at the Conformity Shop on Level 2. And shoppers, stop by Dr. Tom Richards' Lipo Depot, eyelids and lips done while you wait, and ask about his Valentine's Day special. Do two breasts, get one free.
Excuse me.
Welcome to World O Cuisine. Your passport, please?
I didn't bring it. I just...
Whatever, we'll arrange a one-meal visa. Which country would you like to dine in? We can seat you immediately in Belarus. There's a 20-minute wait for Italy. Sri Lanka is temporarily closed while the bomb squad roots around.
Actually, I just wanted to make a phone call. Where are the pay phones?
Just past Swaziland.
Thanks. Excuse me.
Excuse me.
We'll be right back with the shocking conclusion of Pledge This. This is On the Media from NPR.
Support for NPR comes from this and other NPR member stations and the Kresge Foundation, building the capacity of nonprofit organizations through challenge grants since 1924, on the web at kresge.org. The Kellogg Foundation, helping people help themselves by investing in individuals, their families, and their communities, on the web at www.wkkf.org. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, making grants to improve the health and healthcare of all Americans, on the web at rwjf.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
We're back with On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. We move on now to the exciting conclusion of Pledge This, our peek into the life of a mythical public radio station located in the mall of a planned community called Blandon Park. We rejoin news anchor Trent as he makes a potentially life-changing phone call in the food court called World Cuisine.
Excuse me. Sorry.
Hello. You have reached Universal Public Radio. If you are calling for program information, press 1 now. If you are calling for the news department, press 2 now. If you are calling to complain about leftist bias in our coverage, please hold and a comrade will be with you shortly. Hello. This is the UPR News Department. If you wish to file a story, press 1 now. If you wish to file a commentary, press 2 now. If you wish to file a lawsuit, press 3 now. If you wish to speak to some temp, press 0.
Hello, Universal Public Radio.
Leona Crump, please.
Third World Week, this is Leona.
Leona! Trent Rosenblatt.
Trent!
Hey, I'm calling about that audition we discussed.
Oh, yeah. Listen, Trent, we just can't do it.
What? Well, I thought you said I was a top candidate for the host gig. I'd really kind of...
The timing doesn't work, Trent. Sorry. So, we'll just be listening to your show today.
Today's show?
Yeah. We have to pull the trigger fast on this hire, so we'll all be listening to Blandon Park Edition today.
Gee, Leona...
In about 15 minutes, actually.
That'll be your audition.
I'm not sure this is the most ideal platform for me. It's kind of a slow news day, you see.
Make it ideal, Trent.
Dig deeper. Find the essence. Live the moment. Tell it with sound. That's why people tune into UPR, Trent. Church bells. Gravel. Truth that goes crunch, Trent.
Truth that goes crunch.
Leona.
Gotta run, buddy. And I think you do, too. Break a leg. And let me hear it snap.
What?
Trent!
Faye!
How are you?
Why, you look positively seamless. What's happening?
Well, it's 67 degrees here in Blandon Park under partly cloudy skies, and we're playing the hits. How are things at old Without a Clue?
WACLU is and always will be WACLU. It's immutable. Unlike WBPR. What's the format this week? Still all Kenny Rogers all the time?
You betcha. As we swing past 4 p.m. on this beautiful Monday, we're number one in the market.
Look at you, Faye. The pedicure, the power hair. You even sound commercial.
The word is marketable, my friend. I took my instrument to Tom Richards. The man's a genius. One little laryngeal tuck and WBPR moves me into morning drive time. I get seven figures, the chopper, and in 7 years, I get to choose my own doctor.
Actually, I have a little negotiation of my own going on right now with UPR. Don't tell Mary.
You two still sitting 3 feet apart?
She doesn't know.
Trent, what are you screwing around with Universal Public Radio for? It's a snake pit. The pay stinks, the politics, my God, the politics. Listen, you gotta know when to walk away, know when to run. See Dr. Richards about that nose whistle, and I can get you an interview at WBPR.
Thanks, but no thanks. It's not my, style.
Trent, think about my offer. This is Faye. Have a nice day, McVeigh. Catch you next time.
Jackass. Simple-minded jackass.
Porphyria, what are you doing here so close to showtime?
I might ask you the same thing. But if you must know, I wanted to go to Belize for some fried plantains and a Diet Coke, but these jackasses have closed it for some sort of cholera outbreak.
Ah. Did Mary like your commentary?
I haven't showed it to her yet. I'm still frankly aghast at her thoughtless implication that simply because I technically have the use of my legs, I somehow don't belong in a wheelchair.
Don't be silly, Porphyria. Mary respects you enormously. We all do. I know I do. You are an irrepressible voice.
I am the voice of the unheard.
Of course you are.
And the damned unheard never shut up.
I've seen your mail.
These jackasses. They hear a half Latina, one quarter Amish, one quarter Native American in a wheelchair, and they can't get past the, you know, easy stereotype.
Sure, lump you in a category.
Gavolt. They don't know me. Yikes, it's 4:10. I gotta burn rubber.
Yeah, 13 minutes to showtime. Barely time for you to be edited.
Oh, no time for that. I have 4 bonnets at the dry cleaner. Peace, pale brother.
Sorry I'm late. How's everything going?
How's it going? I'll tell you something. It's a nightmare. That's how it's going. Pringle's coming by with another live one, and if it falls through, we're all on the breadline. You blow in 5 minutes before the show like you haven't got a care in the world, and Porphyria has completely and totally vanished.
I think she had to roll out on an errand.
Who rolls out? Who does errands in the middle of a show? Pardon me. I haven't edited her commentary. I haven't even seen her commentary.
I believe she said it's about Skaterama. What do you suppose makes it an arama?
What's the difference? I know she has a bee in her bonnet, but let me tell you something. I need to see the bonnet.
I'm pretty sure you will.
Well, she's certainly not going on the air with something I haven't seen first. We'll have to use an evergreen. Let's check the studio and see what's on the shelf. Scooter, are you there?
Where?
Are you... Scooter, for God's sake, check the rack, please, and see if we have any pre-recorded Porphyrias.
10-4, good buddy. Woo-hoo!
Well, what?
Somebody spilled some chai on my soldier of fortune.
The show is about to start. Do we have any Porphyria commentaries ready?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Not to worry, we have one.
Are you holding it in your hand?
No, Mary, that would be gross.
The reel. Are you holding the reel of Porphyria's commentary?
Now, Hank, this is the newsroom. This is the nerve center. This is where it all comes together. 3 minutes from now, the whole day of journalism comes to fruition in Studio A. We'll listen to the show live in the master control. Come on.
This is very exciting.
I know you'll be impressed. See that glass window? See that fellow with the vague look about him? Go in there, Hank. I'll be right behind you.
Through there?
Yep, that's right. I'll join you in 2 shakes. All right, Mary, you win. China is out of the picture. but I have got the answer to our prayers, the real deal. You said you'd embrace an underwriter whose business you didn't find morally reprehensible. Well, I found him. I found him, Mary, right here in the mall. And get this, he's willing to underwrite the show, the whole shooting match, for 2 years.
Wow. Well, that's excellent. Congratulations. Who is this Mr. Wright?
It's not Mr. Wright. It's Mr. Arama.
Mr. Arama?
That's right. Hank Arama. He owns Skaterama.
And that's him? In the control room? But Mr. Pringle...
Mary, Hank's part of the family now. He had to meet Scooter eventually.
1 minute to air. Hey, Hank. I want to see my scar.
Clear a path, colleagues. High come bearing commentary.
Where the hell have you been?
Meditating on the truth. I have been to Skaterama, and I shall never be the same.
No. This is almost too good to be true. I've got to tell Hank.
All right, Porphyria, go live, but never again.
Don't worry, Mary, you wouldn't change a thing.
Set my identity.
One, two, three, four, five. One, two, three, four, five. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. Scooter, how's the whistle situation?
I'm not hearing it. Give me some more nose.
Okay.
Clean as a whistle. No, I mean clean as a not whistle. Stand by, Trent. 3, 2, 1.
You're listening to Blandon Park Edition. I'm Trent Rosenblit. In today's top stories, in a big blow to the local economy, Blandon Park was eliminated as a possible location for a U.S. Department of Energy radioactive waste disposal site. Disappointed economic development officials remain optimistic, however, about Blandon Park's chances to be a finalist for the so-called Prison Without Walls for terrorists and serial killers. The Blandon Park Good Neighbors Council has announced revised architectural standards aimed at curbing the outbreak of non-earth tone mailbox flags, citing numerous examples of, quote, alarming nonconformity. Supreme Neighbor Thad Von Dachau vowed to eradicate what he called the Red Menace. Von Dachau, of course, created a stir last month while pressing for the arrest and deportation of Joseph Winter, an albino American who resides in Blandon Park's Highway Vista quadrant.
I stand by my position. He is a decent fellow, but his eyes are simply too garish.
Supreme Neighbor Thad Von Dachau. In entertainment news, actress J.P. Morgan has agreed to be Grand Marshal of the annual Blandon Park Parade of Minivans. This follows the sudden withdrawal from the event of the Blandon Park High School Fightin' Compromisers football squad. The Tan and Beige are serving a month of weekend detention for what administrators termed unspecified crimes against humanity. More Blandon Park Edition after the break.
You're listening to WACLU, all the way to the left on your radio dial. Underwritten this hour by Funeral Shack, the last word in the last purchase you'll ever make. See our familiar black kiosk at the Blandon Park Mall. And by listeners like you.
Stand by, Trenton 5.
When do I talk?
Just wait for the light to go on, honey.
Okay.
Are you nervous, sweetheart?
A little bit.
Don't worry, it'll be fun.
And now back to Blandon Park Edition and the Dean of Broadcast Journalists in the southwestern suburbs of Metroplex, not counting Metroplex Heights, Trent Rosenblit.
We're back with our very special guest, a very nice, if I may say, very sweet little girl named Courtney Jenkins, who is the Girl Scout cookie sales champ for all of Blandon Park. Courtney, you sold 1,212 boxes of cookies. What are your selling secrets?
I followed the stench of fear, Mr. Rosenblit. I walked down every street in Blandon Park and every stinking cul-de-sac. In the darker districts, the shadows, the seamy underbelly where decent people seldom go. I saw things, Mr. Rosenblit. A dead bird, a decapitated Care Bear, a set of shutters in a non-conforming shade of lavender.
My God.
God has nothing to do with it. I bore my cookies on my back, and I sold them to the frightened and the weak. I'm only 11. But I'm tired. So very tired.
I see. And did your mommy and daddy help you?
My parents are dead.
I'm a ward of the county.
And I'm sure the county is very proud of you. What do you think you'd like to be when you grow up?
Heavily sedated.
We only have 30 seconds left, Courtney, and I wanted to ask you in the few, 26 seconds, now it's 25 seconds, in the remaining few, okay, it's only 22 seconds we have remaining. Did you think, Courtney?
Did you know there's a whistling sound coming out of your nose?
All righty, we're here with the adorable Courtney Jenkins, Blandon Park Girl Scout Cookie Sales Champ. Courtney, to wrap up, what would you say is the most popular cookie?
Oh, that would have to be the Thin Mints.
Thank you, sweetheart. And now with today's last word, WACLU's senior news analyst, Porphyria Stoltzfus Hawkfeather.
Today I speak on a disturbing subject. A nightmare. One of our society's most pustulant shankers. I refer, of course, to ice skating. Consider, for example, the waste of resources. Don't water your exquisite lawn, we're warned over here. Don't put so much ice in my whiskey sour, you whore, over there. And every damn time you turn around, don't take a long, lingering, so desperately needed, get me away from all this pain, you simple-minded jackass! Bath. Countless marriages have been split like the paw of a playful kitten named Penny trying to catch the needle of my sewing machine over the issue of running water while brushing teeth. I know mine was. And I know I'm a very fast brusher.
Girl in that dress, stay there. Someone will get to you.
Do you see the children? Wee ones? Adorable little angels gliding across the ice. Ha! They are baby seals, innocently awaiting slaughter. It's called slam and slice, and I ask you whose wobbling little calf will be next. Ask yourself when you next skate on a frozen river of blood. At long last, something must be done about ice skating, and I cannot do it alone. I am very, very busy. For WACLU, this is Porphyria Stoltfus Hawkfeather.
Okay, Trent, we're clear.
Thank God.
Thanks for watching my Orange Julius for me, Mr. Pringle.
My pleasure, Courtney. Would you like another one?
Yes, please.
Okay, I'm buying. Hello, Mary. Great show, as usual.
I'm sorry, Miss... Wait, what?
You really shifted the paradigm. Excellent work.
I noticed Mr. Arama left in a... I guess you'd call it a big hurry. Is he still on the team?
Hank? No.
Well, you don't seem too upset about it. I thought he was our last hope.
Last hope? Are you out of your mind? This is our greatest opportunity.
Trent, do you know what's going on?
The Girl Scout talked Arama out of suing.
And sold him 70 boxes of Do-Si-Dos. Mary, meet our new vice president for development.
Hi.
Well, that is an awfully big job for such a little girl.
Don't worry. I'll squeeze them till they bleed.
Come on, Courtney. Let's hit the mall and synergize.
Okay.
Well, Trent, that wasn't so bad, was it?
Trent Rosenblatt. Call on line one.
I think we made radio history this afternoon.
Mary, please, not now.
Trent, line one.
Hello, Rosenblatt here. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. No. Yeah, you're right. Right. It didn't crunch. I understand. Thanks anyway. Bye. Well, Mary, I guess I should tell you what that was all about.
It was some ass from UPR calling to say you didn't get the job.
How could you possibly know that? All I said was it didn't crunch.
Trent, how far apart do we sit?
Among those who must take responsibility for Pledge This are our technical director and sound designer Dylan Keefe and senior producer and supreme neighbor Arun Roth. Janine Garofalo played Mary Demarest, Fred Willard was Trent Rosenblit, Tony Shalhoub was Angus Pringle, and Lisa Gladstone was Porphyria. You also heard the vocal stylings of Scott Strickland, Faye Schneider, Karen Trott, Peter Pringle, Sharon Ball, Sophie Kaplan, Rex Doan, Chris Riley, Stephen Day, Polly Humphreys, and Scott Simon. On the Media was directed by Katya Rogers and produced by Megan Ryan, Tony Field, and Derek John, engineered by Jennifer Munson, and edited by me. We had help from John Keith, Natasha Kurgankar, Robert Goldstein, Ann Kossoff, and Mike Wolo. Our webmaster is Amy Pearl, a.k.a. Trudy, the receptionist. Dean Capello is our executive producer. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. You can listen to the program and get free transcripts and MP3 downloads at onthemedia.org and email us at onthemedia@wnyc.org. This is On the Media from NPR. I'm Brooke Gladstone. We'll see Bob in September.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the William T. Grant Foundation, helping the nation value young people as a resource through research and programs, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. The Charles Stewart Mott Foundation, online at mott.org, supporting efforts to promote a just, equitable and sustainable society, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Support from the media comes from the Bydell Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the John and Anna Maria Phillips Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio. This is NPR.